Hey everyone, welcome to the next episode of Words About Biology. Happy almost September. Jeez, where did the summer go? September already. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about blood. Unfortunately, not in a spooky Halloween-y kind of way, because we're just not that kind of podcast. But we're going to be looking at it from a scientific point of view. Do you know your blood type? Have you ever donated blood before? Hopefully you can answer yes to both those questions, but if not, I encourage you to both find out what your blood type is, and if you're up to it, donate blood. It's really not as scary as it might seem, and there's usually cookies at the end. So when we're talking about blood types, you're either A, B, O, or AB. And your blood type is inherited from your parents. So you'll get one gene from your mom, one from your dad. The A and B type genes are dominant, and the O type gene is recessive, meaning if you are O type blood, you have two O recessive genes. So when we're thinking about these blood types, AB positive is what's known as the universal recipient, meaning that they can receive any type of blood without an issue, while O negative is the universal donor, meaning that they can give to any other blood type without issue. Most common in the U.S. is O positive. About 38% of people in the U.S. are O positive, and also A positive at about 34%. While the universal recipient, which I just mentioned, AB positive, it's around 3% of the population, and then O negative, the universal donor, is only around 7%. So what do these letters mean? So it's based on the presence of antigens on your red blood cells. And there are two types of antigens, the A and the B antigens. So people with the A antigens on their blood are A blood type. People with the B are B blood type. With AB, you have both of them. And with O, you have none of them. Along with having these antigens on your red blood cells, you also develop antibodies against the antigens that you lack. And this happens by the time you're 6 months old. For example, if you are A type, you have antibodies against the B antigens. If you are B type, you have antibodies against the A antigens. And it's these antibodies that cause difficulties with blood transfusions and make it so that you can only receive a certain type of blood. This is because if you have any of these anti-A or anti-B antibodies in your blood, they're going to attack the other types, making that blood type not compatible with you. Another thing you commonly hear with blood types, apart from the ABO, is the positive or negative. So what exactly does that mean? So the positive or negative refers to an Rh factor or a rhesus factor. And this Rh factor is another antigen that's found on the covering of red blood cells. So you're either negative or positive, you don't have it or you do, and this Rh factor is also inherited genetically from your parents, with the Rh positive being dominant and the Rh negative being recessive. Similar to the ABO blood types, being positive or negative affects your ability to accept a blood transfusion of a different type. So if you are positive, you can receive both positive and negative blood, but if you're negative, you can only receive negative blood. So this all sounds a little complicated, and it kind of is, and it's what leads to the issues when people are needing blood transfusions and the correct blood type is not available for them. So as I mentioned earlier, O negative is the universal donor, so anyone can receive that type of blood. However, with only 7% of the American population being O negative, it's not the most common blood type you'll come across. So the idea I'm going to be talking about today was just presented at the National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society. This was a meeting that was held last week, and this particular topic was presented on the 21st. The title of this talk was Discovery of Cazymes for Cell Surface Glycan Removal Through Metagenomics Towards Universal Blood, and it was presented by Stephen Withers from the University of British Columbia. Now, to break down and simplify that title, what this talk was about was looking at different enzymes or identifying enzymes that can be used to process blood in order to make it acceptable by people of all blood types. So that's where the idea of a universal blood comes in. So something where the A, the B, the O, the positive, the negative, doesn't matter. Anyone could receive it in a blood transfusion. The idea for this started with the fact that these A and B antigens on the red blood cells are simple sugars. So they're a pretty simple structure and theoretically could be removed from the red blood cells. The trick is finding the proper enzyme or proper mechanism for removal. What Dr. Withers and his group specifically targeted in this work was the gut environment. So in your gastrointestinal tract, your intestine is lined with mucins, and these mucins provide a protective layer. And they are essentially glycosylated proteins. So that means proteins with branches of sugars attached to them. And these are what serve as attachment points for gut bacteria. And these bacteria also feed off of these glycosylated proteins and the sugars on them. So because they're digesting these sugars on the mucins, they thought that perhaps they also possess the ability to digest the similarly structured sugars that are the A and B antigens on red blood cells. So what they did to try and isolate the enzymes that the bacteria use to digest these simple sugars is isolate the total DNA from the gut environment. And this is part of the metagenomics approach mentioned in the title. They took this total DNA and fragmented it into either individual genes or groups of genes, and then transformed this DNA into E. coli. What this means is that they gave the E. coli the ability to express these genes and perform the activities accompanied with these genes from the gut bacteria. They do this because E. coli are easy to manipulate and use in this matter. What they did with all these different strains of bacteria that they generated, which are hosting the DNA from the gut environment, is screen them. A way that you can grow E. coli in the lab is in a petri dish on a gel agar plate. And if you dilute them enough, you can isolate individual colonies and identify their traits. So what they were looking for here was a strain of E. coli containing the DNA that made it capable of digesting these simple sugars. From there, they could work backwards from the DNA incorporated into that E. coli and hopefully isolate the individual gene that was responsible for this enzymatic activity. These E. coli can be identified in a number of ways. One example that comes to my mind is if you create the agar gel with one of these simple sugars within it. So you make the plate to contain the simple sugars, plate your bacteria on it, and then look for a change in the agar. May that be a change in how opaque it is, possibly a change in color, something to identify that the E. coli you are growing on that plate are digesting the simple sugars within it. So this was the approach they used. And they were able to identify useful glycosidases or enzymes to digest simple sugars, and specifically ones that are able to remove A and B antigens from red blood cells. So this was their first step, just identifying the enzyme and figuring out where it came from. And it turns out it came from a strain of Streptococcus that is common to the gut. And what they did was they took the specific strain which had the best digestion of the A and B antigens and kind of forced the evolution of it. And you can do this by manipulating the culture conditions. Through several rounds of this evolution, they were able to develop variants of the strain with greatly improved activity or greatly improved enzyme activity towards the linkages in the A and B antigens. So through these forced evolutions, they improved the enzymatic activity. The next step they're working on includes testing these enzymes on a larger scale and potentially moving forward to clinical trials. So I think the application of this is a ways out. I think it's really interesting and a really practical and applicable subject and something that would really be beneficial. Imagine if we were able to take all the blood that's donated and convert it into this common blood type that is usable for anyone. That would be a really great breakthrough. So I'll leave a link to the abstract for this talk on the blog, as well as a link to a previous publication by this group, some of the earlier work that they did with the enzymes to remove the antigens from the red blood cells. As always, you can find that at wordsaboutbiology.wordpress.com. I know I don't mention this every week, but you can also follow the podcast on Instagram and on Twitter. On Instagram, it's wordsaboutbiology, all one word, and on Twitter, it's wordsaboutbio. And I post with each episode on all of those forums, and usually we'll have a link to the blog post, so if you want to make any comments, if you have any questions, feel free to leave them on the blog post, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. With that, I hope you guys have a great week. I'll come at you shortly with the next episode. See you later.